insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarsi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, as you were with us, we are discussing the 62nd verse of this chapter. Now let's listen to this verse.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءَ وَيَجْعَلُكُمْ خُلَفَاءَ الْأَرْضِ أَإِلَهٌ مَّعَ اللَّهِ قَلِيلًا مَّا تَذَكَّرُونَ.
Is he not best who responds to the desperate one when he calls upon him and removes evil and makes you inheritors of the earth? Is there a deity with Allah? Little do you remember.
So this verse, as we said, specifically the beginning part of it, has some very important aspects to be discussed. أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءَ. Or he is better the one who answers the call of the distressed when they call on him, and removes the distress from him. So, in the previous episodes, we tried to have a look at this kind of iltirar as a prerequisite for the acceptance of supplication. We also had a look at the reality of ibadah, and we said that dua and supplication is mukhul ibadah, is the very essence of ibadah. And we said that the nature of ibadah is turning towards the Almighty Allah, which means that if you are not turning towards the Almighty Allah, since you're always in the state of movement, either you are in the way of the Almighty Allah or you are moving away from Him. This is very important. So if you are not in the state of attention, if you are not in the state of having this kind of awareness, you are in the state of ignorance. This is one undeniable fact. Now, we were saying that when the Almighty Allah says that أَمَنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءَ, when he says, is he better or the one who answers the call of the distressed? This relationship between answering and response and prayer and dua needs to be discussed. Now, one aspect that needs to be delved deeper in is the kind of comprehension we have of ourselves and the states we are in. What I mean is that there is one ontological neediness inside us, inside of us all, that there is this kind of faqr and this kind of indigence and need that is very important. And this is one of the keys that we can understand the relation between ijab and dua with. So, this would also help us to understand how prayer can be the key to Allah's mercy, and how can this prayer be effective in attracting the mercy of the Almighty Allah. Now, what I need to mention in this regard is really important, so I need your full attention in this case, okay? So, I will try to explain this relationship after a short break.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
So, dear listeners, we said that when we are discussing the concept of prayer and response and the relation between these two, we need to have a look at this aspect, which is the ontological need, the kind of indigence and faqr that we have inside of us. I mean, have a look at this verse. أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءَ. Yes, is he better when he answers the call of the distressed? So you see, this state of iltirar, يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ, this state of iltirar, how does a person reach this state? One of the most important and key factors and elements in reaching this state is that the very person, the person in question, has realized that he or she has a kind of neediness, has a kind of indigence and faqr inside himself or herself. So every prayer embodies a certain degree of perception of poverty by the supplicant. So since this prayer denotes a level among the levels of realization of one's needs towards Almighty Allah, I mean, why has the person involved in the state of supplication and dua in the very first place? This means he is referring to someone in a higher position than him because he knows there is someone who has the power, who has the authority, who has this kind of strength to answer him. So this means every kind of prayer has a state of understanding and recognizing this ontological need, this faqr in it. The more, this is the rule, the more the one's awareness of his needs towards the Almighty Allah, the closer would be his prayer to acceptance and ijabah, and nearer would be to the mercy of the Almighty Allah. Now you understand this. أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءَ. The state of answering this prayer is so close to this state of iltirar. Why? One important element is that the person who is in the state of iltirar has totally realized that there is no one else to turn to. There is nothing to turn to except the Almighty Allah. Because there is no such thing as miserliness in the mercy of the Almighty Allah. And when we refer to Him, we are sure that we will be answered. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. Your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
challenge of suffer in my worry kindles my mind.
Israel is committing a live stream genocide, yet Israeli sporting teams and players have not been declared global pariahs. They continue to participate in club and international competitions with the full backing of governing bodies. As bodies are bloodied, starved, and martyred in Gaza by the IOF, Israeli teams attempt to whitewash their genocide. Nowhere is this starker than in the world's global sport, football. Calls to FIFA and UEFA, the sports governing bodies, have fallen on deaf ears despite public revulsion at Israeli actions. But Israeli teams may soon be shown the red card. A brand new initiative aims to target those at the very heart of football and bring about a revolution through sports. Leading the campaign is Ashish Prashar. He is a former Middle East peace envoy advisor, political strategist, and speaker. Thank you very much, Ashish, for joining us today to speak about this. Why football? You know, why are you trying to address the genocide through sports and specifically through football?
Well, there's a saying that there should be no normalization in abnormal times. And what is more normal than people playing football, right? We think about how that brings people together culturally, through, you know, fans, through games, through moments in life. And it's really important that if a state is committing a genocide, that it has no place in that. You know, the if you look at the big impact from the South African apartheid timeline, the sports boycott had a pivotal impact on them dismantling the apartheid regime. And it's because it was isolation. But also, moreover, sport connects with everybody. Unlike any other cultural thing like art or music, pretty much everybody engages in what they would call the Colosseum in every way, right? Yeah. And no other sport is bigger than football. Yeah. And with football, you trigger all the other sports, right? You know, if football goes, the Olympics go. If football goes, all the other sports follow. And that isolates this genocidal entity. And that's why it's so important that we follow this path.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, amazing to see how different countries, different cultures, you know, when we talk of the big football clubs, how, you know, there's such attachment in different parts of the world. Ashish, tell us about the initiative itself. You know, what is it about and what are you trying to really achieve?
Well, look, you said it yourself in the opening. FIFA and UEFA have ignored calls to throw Israel out of football for 2 years. I mean, it even goes longer. You know, Israel's been sports washing their crimes through sport and culture for decades, right? Campaigns have been running for decades to kick them out of football. They've failed. I mean, they've raised awareness, but the reality is you have an immoral being in at the top of FIFA who's best friends with Donald Trump right now. The idea that he is individually going to throw Israel out, I think, is a non-starter. So we have to think of different, more radical tactics, right? And there's a saying in the Black Panthers, like, use some radical imagination. We know we can't get the top. Israel's also invested heavily in protecting their place at FIFA's table. So where do we go? We follow something that just happened in recent history. When Russia was thrown out of football, they weren't thrown out because FIFA and UEFA have morals. In fact, the only consistent thing here is the head of FIFA has no morals, and he doesn't care if white children or brown children are being killed. He kicked them out because on the second day of the invasion, 12 European countries, led by Sweden and Poland, boycotted Russia. They wouldn't play the Russian national team. They wouldn't play their club teams. And for that reason, they forced UEFA and FIFA to suspend Russia because football couldn't continue. It actually impacted the integrity of the game. And we are following that same model. We are starting a coordinated campaign to target European football federations and, moreover, the heads of European football federations. So we are asking the public to flood those football federations, protest them daily, protest the chief execs and presidents of those. Because here's the other kicker. Most chief execs and presidents of football federations have executive power, meaning they can actually just boycott a nation, club, or a player if they deem it's the right decision. So that's individuals really, yeah, have this power, yeah, and I want to make that really clear.
Yeah.
You can target someone who is an accessible person in your country and demand they take action to get these genocidal players out of your country, get that genocidal team never step foot on your pitch, and make sure that genocidal state is not normalized anymore in your country. So you should be going out there to demand your federation acts.
Which is quite surprising, I mean, at least for me, you know, countries, for example, like Spain, where we've seen a lot of pro-Palestinian, you know, movements and things happening, yet we haven't seen anything from football. I mean, does it surprise you?
I mean, it doesn't, right? There's a lot of money in football, and I'm sure that's played a massive role in this, and I'm sure there's lots of pressure coming down from FIFA on federations not to do anything. But also, I think actually the bigger reason is nobody knows they can do this. Okay. You know, how many people actually knew that there was a boycott of Russia before the FIFA suspension? These federation heads, including in nations like Ireland, Norway, and Spain, who are supposedly Palestinian allies, they get away with the fact that nobody knows they can do this. Most football fans don't know they can do this. Most footballers don't know they can do this. I've talked to many people in the football space who didn't realize that that's what caused the suspension in Russia. Mm-hmm. And these people are experts. And they were like, oh, I didn't realize that. And that is the most powerful thing here. Now, we are tired of protesting and nobody listening, right? Gianni Infantino is the same as Trump or Starmer. He's sitting in neon Switzerland, doesn't care that we sit in stands. Mm-hmm. In fact, he even made a point of moving his North American headquarters to Trump Tower. If you ever wanted a sign that he doesn't care about our protests, he stuck his flag in the ground and said, this is where I stand. So what do? We go after accessible targets, people in our countries that actually might have said they care about Palestinians in some cases, especially at a government level. In societal level, I think everyone in Europe we targeted is on our side. We are the people, and we have actual power here to make sure that they know that we will not let them let it be unknown that they've been sports washing genocide this entire time. So as we launch this campaign, everyone's name will be public who has this power in each football federation. And like I said, we demand that they act to boycott Israel, because there's no way this genocidal entity, who now it's been declared by the UN that it is a genocide, should continue to participate on the pitches of Europe.
So apart from fans, which I believe are the ones you're targeting, you know, who else are you mobilizing? And how would you suggest people support the campaign?
People of conscience. This is not hey, you have to be a football fan. By the way, I think everybody, in a weird way, is. It's like I said, it's the only global game, right? Everybody kind of watches it to a degree. But it's people of conscience. Like, I don't really believe that there's any difference between a football fan, a union member, a political strategist or whatever, right? This is an opportunity to actually knock one of the core pillars out from the Israeli regime. This is an opportunity to knock the culture pillar out. And then the economic pillar falls too. Isolation causes more isolation, right? If we keep going down this path, if we knock this one. By the way, this is an easy win. If we sustain pressure on these football federation heads, everywhere they go, not just at the federation building, their homes, their schools. This is important because they, at this point, are complicit. The heads of federations in Italy, France, Spain, Ireland are complicit because they have known for the last 2 years they can act. And if they claim solidarity with Palestine, they've done nothing to show it. Norway recently said they will play the game with Israel and donate the funds to Gaza. Yes, Norway, an allied nation, and their head of the federation wears a kefir, but she knows deep down she can boycott Israel. Like, and the reason we're doing this simultaneously here, because I want to be a realist about this, because, yes, I've said that about Norway, but Norway are not going to give up their World Cup place, right? But the reason we're doing it across Europe at the same time is so they provide each other cover. So you did this once as 12 nations. Do it again as 12 nations, or 9 nations, or 8 nations, or however many of you decide to do it together. Because I guarantee you, UEFA and FIFA are not going to punish all of you as a collective. Could you imagine an environment where they throw Spain, the number one team in football, out of a World Cup for Israel?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the collective part of it, I think, is the most effective, you know, strategy. But what would you suggest, you know, people who are listening probably and thinking, you know, I want to support this initiative. How do they put pressure? What do they do?
Obviously, the easy tools to use are emailing the federation heads, calling the federation offices, making sure your demands are met. But organize. They are scared of you. There's a French saying, nous sommes le pouvoir, we are the power. Came out of the 70s and the 60s when the unions took control of the countries. You are powerful beyond measure. And we need to organize things every day. Don't just rely on football fans and the ultras that have been organizing the first wave of protests. Palestinian movements should be targeting them. This is a win. We're always saying, how can we win? What are we going to do to make a change immediately? Right, they can make this decision tomorrow. Yeah. They don't need to vote. They don't need to consult. They don't need to do anything. Apply pressure every day till they break. And Israel will not be playing those international games in October against Italy and Norway. Israeli club teams will not play in European competitions, and Israeli players will be banned from stepping foot in Europe. But it only works if you apply pressure. They are scared of you, and they know you mobilized. You mobilized at a target that is accessible. Not prime ministers and presidents sit behind gates that don't care that what we say on the street when we protest on a Saturday, they're not even there. Be there. Every time fans get together for a game, they're already mobilized.
Yeah.
So now direct that anger to them and then go to the game.
Yeah.
And if they end up at the game, protest them at the game. These federation heads travel to games.
Amazing. And I mean, honestly, it's a no-brainer in a way. I mean, it's not just that there is a genocide going on. They're specifically targeting, you know, sporting facilities. 800 athletes in Gaza have been killed, have been murdered, you know. Why has it taken so long, Ashish? Why has this mobilization not happened earlier? Why are people not aware of these things?
Lack of radical imagination in some cases, I think. I think there's a twofold answer to that. I think you want to believe that there is moral. At some stage, something will kick in with individuals that they've seen enough, they've got to do something. But you have to look at the leadership of the West right now, and our governing bodies in sport are a reflection of that leadership. They're soulless. Like, they don't care about the value of our life, right? So if that is the top, we've got to be radical of how we use different tools and techniques and targets to get what we want to be delivered here, which is ending this genocide, right? And I think sometimes certain organizations move like oil tankers, and they're stuck on the path of a campaign that they believe in. But unfortunately, that campaign is never going to work by itself. So we're taking it one step further. I believe in that original campaign. But hey, it's not working. So now what else can we do? We take it one step further. That original campaign mobilized fans, got them to care about Palestine. But guess what? Now let's deploy the fans in a strategic way, in an actual strategic way, to actually get Israel booted out of football, get them boycotted by every European nation.
Do you think there's enough of the fans and, you know, the public in Europe to support this?
Yes. We don't need new people to join this movement. They're already there. You've watched us march in our millions, right? And you've watched football fans chant in our tens of thousands of stadiums. In fact, Paris Saint-Germain's fans, who I'm going to call out directly, started the chant about, you know, Nous l'enfant de Gaza. We are the kids of Gaza. We are the children of Gaza. Right? They've led that chant, and people sing it all over Europe, you know? And I think this shows you there's a deep connection, a deep solidarity with regular people. I think the problem with our movement so much is we obviously rely on celebrity to amplify something, right? And this is the case with many movements. Malcolm X always used to say that, you know, celebrities are puppets and can be controlled opposition. The actual power to make this happen isn't Mohamed Salah, isn't another famous footballer. The power to make this happen, what they're really scared of is the people. And if the people are there every day outside that federation will buckle and break.
And when it comes to football, I mean, you can't overestimate, you know, the power of the fans who actually make football clubs what they are. Mm-hmm. Who else, Ashish, is involved in this campaign? You know, organizations, people behind it?
And people behind it, you know, there's amazing human beings behind this who've given up their time to work on this. But organizations, like we have the ADC in the United States, the Hind Rajab Foundation, you know, we have Code Pink. People who know how to organize, by the way. People who are doing radical things, like chasing, you know, IOF soldiers around the world. Shout out to the Hind Rajab Foundation. That is radical work. You know, we're not going to wait for an end of a genocide. We're going to do it while it's happening. We wanted to put a group together who actually have radical imagination and want to chase an end goal and actually deliver something. You know, the problem with some of our institutions in this space, they were built for a timeline that was slower, right? They were built on the models of apartheid South Africa. I believe in BDS, but the reality with that, it was built in an environment where white South Africans were not exterminating the black population because they needed them as a labor force. The difference here is the Israeli occupation wants to exterminate every last Palestinian, and they're doing it at the quickest rate that they've done since the beginning of the genocide right now, because they've got it on multiple fronts, the starvation, the bombing, everything. They are killing people en masse, but we're operating like an oil tanker to stop it. So we need to be more radical, faster. The flotilla is a great example. That is commitment to change, you know. People trying to do all sorts of different things in Europe, like challenging embassies and ambassadors at this point. So why are they not doing something? That is radical attacks. We need to keep going down that line. We need to put pressure on individuals who have power to change things, right? We have the ability to change this. We need to shut down cities.
Yes.
Look at the French. Only last week they had a general strike. They're having another general strike this week, shutting down economies. Yeah. If we really want to do this, we need to be more radical. No more playing the long game, because there will be no one left to play the long game for.
Absolutely.
And the reality with this can work tomorrow. If we did this for 3 or 4 days this week, these federations will bend and break. And the ones who are Palestinian allies have no reason not to say they're not going to boycott. Calling out Norway here, calling out Ireland, calling out Belgium's now new government who's saying they support Palestine, calling out Portugal, Spain, Italy, who are the public, have been mass mobilized on behalf of Palestine, where unions are threatening national strikes. They are speaking for Palestine as we speak, and they will deliver justice. So those guys, take all those protests and anger at your federation, because they will break, because the public is on your side.
Some people might say to you, you know, you should not mix politics with sports. What would you say?
Muhammad Ali, sport speaks to the people. There's nothing else to say. What anyone not speaking out about the genocide in sport is a coward. You know, there's a lot of silence in sport. And it's, how are you not a human being? Also, what athletes don't realize and what they need to start realizing, especially in sports like football, is you're more powerful than the organization. Mm-hmm. They need you.
Yeah.
It is a disgrace that some of the most high-powered footballers in the world, who control millions in endorsements and everything else, they're not going to take that from you. They need you. Mohamed Salah is a great example. The Premier League going to sanction him because he speaks on behalf of Palestine? Not a chance in hell. They use him to market to the entire continent of Africa.
Yeah.
Like, they need him more than he needs them.
Yeah.
And
bottom line
is,
this is all about humanity. You can't separate these different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, politicians have been involved in sports. You talked of, you know, the South African example. There wasn't the kind of lobby that Israeli, so the Zionist control. So this is not, you know, these are not separate components. These are all parts of what makes our lives.
Look, anytime there's war crimes, mass atrocities, genocide, you have to look at everything, right? It's not just about military and politics. Culture normalizes evil entities with us. And culture is where they should not be welcome as well. Because you isolate them. They are a pariah. You have to isolate them. Sport is part of life. You have to ask why people divide everything. Why do they categorize everything? They do that, so it's harder to actually change anything. In the end of the day, whether you're a footballer or a politician, you're a human being. Whether you're a fan or a union member, you're a human being. And if you care about other human beings, you should be acting right now. Right?
So this... Obviously, this is all about stopping the genocide, you know, and it's about Palestinians. But do you think this could be a crack for bigger things if we were able to succeed with this? Because there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of power, like you say, controlled in football. But if this cracks, that there'll be bigger repercussion than just stopping the genocide.
I mean, my focus on this campaign is the genocide. Mm. And the goal is to make Israel... the Israeli occupation as isolated as possible to stop any form of normalization. Like I said to you at the beginning, football is the first domino. The Olympics will go. Other cultural institutions will go. Eurovision is going as we speak. Art will go. Other things will go. If football goes, the cultural dominoes are huge. It's why you always go after what they invest in. You don't go after something they don't care about. The reason they invest so heavily in football is they know the domino effect. And we need to go after that with everything we have, because we know it will topple a lot of other things. And if we do that, they will be isolated beyond measure. And then it starts to affect the economy.
Mm-hmm.
My only goal here is to stop the genocide, like anybody else I know who's working on anything right now related to Palestine. And if this puts a nail in the Israeli occupation's coffin, that's great.
What would determine, you know, the success of the campaign, and what's the timeline you're looking at?
We want them to act as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. There is no timeline. The goal is to have them kicked out tomorrow, yesterday,
mm-hmm.
right? The success here is as many European nations as possible boycott the Israeli occupation's national team, their club teams, and ban their players from ever stepping foot in Europe again. And the goal is to have as many European nations do that. And we believe we can get half a dozen to 10 to go in the first couple of weeks, but it requires the people, because the people are the power. And when we start recognizing that, stop relying on celebritification or, you know, big social media accounts to do the work for us, we'll realize that we can change anything we want.
Thank you so much, Ashish. It's amazing that you are, you know, working on this campaign. And I'm sure, you know, everybody will support it. We, of course, will continue to monitor and spotlight this important initiative. Thank you all so much for being with us on this special program. And once again, thank you again, Ashish, for both doing the initiative and for sitting down with us to speak about this. Thank you. Goodbye.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Ilm-e fiqh az ulum sharifi islami.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
انسان بی معبود نمیشه. انسان بدون پرستش نمیشه. انسان بدون عشق نمیشه.
Man cannot be without an object of worship. Man cannot be without devotion. Man cannot be without love. Love and devotion are inherent in human nature. This means that if someone does not praise God, they will praise a human who hides under a mosquito net for fear of a mosquito. We are servants only to God. No one else has anything of their own. You go to the cemetery and how many heroes are lying there? How many scholars are sleeping there? The photos one sees are more of young people than the elderly. Even a good name fades. Today they name a street after someone. Tomorrow they have names and change it. After a century or two passes, our grave will also be forgotten. So what are we turning to? We must only be his servants. Not servants of force, not servants of wealth, not servants of hypocrisy, not servants of our own desires, and not servants of others' desires. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Yeah.
Good day to all our listeners. You are tuning to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with Round the World with reporters. Listen to fascinating reports from all over the globe as reporters tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. That will be followed by Minbar. The program covers speeches on various subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. Our final program this hour will be our radio productions feature. Stay with us for this hour.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Outside the Palestinian mission in London, history in the making. The iconic Palestinian flag raised, preceded by an impassioned speech by the country's ambassador, flanked by British politicians.
This moment is not only about Palestine. It is also about Britain and the British government's solemn responsibility. It is about ending the denial of the Palestinian people's inalienable right to freedom and self-determination. And it is an acknowledgement of a historic injustice.
The ceremony follows the UK's recognition of Palestine as a state, aligning Britain with more than 140 countries worldwide.
This is now officially the Palestinian embassy in London, the country's flag atop this pole for the first time since the UK's recognition of the country. It is a symbolic but powerful moment, the participants here say, one that affirms a nation's struggle for self-determination that has gone on for far too long.
But beyond symbolism, questions remain. With the genocide in Gaza ongoing, the West Bank under occupation, and Britain's continued arms sales to Israel, does recognition mean anything?
British government recognizes Palestine, carries with it responsibilities. Responsibility not to supply arms to Israel. Responsibilities not to share military information with Israel. And a demand, which we will be intensively making, for full economic sanctions against Israel, including all trade embargoes, until the occupation ends.
In the run-up to the recognition announcement, a YouGov poll found less than half of Britons saying recognition was a good idea, while only 18% disagreed.
I can understand the skepticism and cynicism with the history of this whole area. So I can understand that completely. My role as a parliamentarian and the people that I represent, and which are the good people of this country, and millions of them, will now ensure that they utilize this position to take it to the next step.
At the same time, there are other voices in Britain, like those at this debate in Birmingham, who say while recognition was long overdue, the only way forward is one state, not two.
The two-state proposition is clearly a Zionist talking point. It's designed to kick the can down the road, to continually kick the can down the road, to never, ever be in a situation where such a notion could ever be brought into existence.
For supporters here, today is about hope, solidarity, and international legitimacy. For Palestinians under bombardment, it's a reminder that recognition alone is not liberation. Saeed Pourreza, London.
On Monday, hundreds of thousands of people flooded the streets of tens of Italian cities to express their solidarity with the Palestinians who have been suffering from indescribable horrors perpetrated by the Israeli regime. Rallies and demonstrations were held on the occasion of a 24-hour general strike involving the public and private sectors, called by a string of base unions. In a joint statement, the unions said the strike was against the genocide in Gaza and the Italian government's supply of weapons to Israel.
Non è più possibile.
Cannot tolerate any longer the crimes that Netanyahu is committing against the Palestinian, and Italy's government is not only doing nothing to stop it, but it is an accomplice.
We said it many times already that we firemen are also UN ambassadors, as you can see from the UNICEF tag on our uniform, and we cannot remain silent in the face of the slaughter of children in Palestine.
Hundreds of thousands of Italians have taken to the streets to voice their outrage at the Italian government for its unconditional support to the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Rallies in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians are being held in more than 80 cities and towns across the Italian peninsula and islands. More than 100,000 people in the Italian capital, Rome, staged a demonstration near Central Station, while dockers in Genoa blocked access roads to the port as part of protests against the Israeli regime's ground offensive in Gaza City. Pro-Palestine rallies were also held in all major Italian cities, including Milan, Bologna, Naples and Turin.
If our government acts as an accomplice in the face of the Gaza genocide, what sorts of future will lie ahead us?
A new large pro-Palestine demonstration is also slated to take place in Rome on October 4. Max Civili, Rome.
As Israel illegally and brutally invades Gaza City, a noise protest was held at the headquarters of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the powerful pro-Zionist lobbying group. Many are saying that the Holocaust occurring in Gaza City is a shocking new low in Israel's attempted genocide of the Palestinian people, and that immediate support for Palestine is needed to prevent the Western-backed invasion.
It's on the responsibility of everybody, whether you're Palestinian or Arab or American or whatever you may be, all across the world, to come out and show a force in a united action to say that we reject all of these actions by the United States and every other Western complicit country that has allowed the genocide to go on for so long.
This week, Canada and Australia followed the leader of the English Commonwealth in finally recognizing a Palestinian state. But many say that it's an empty safety valve to manipulate their increasingly anti-Israel constituencies and to distract from the Gaza City takeover.
What is a recognition of a statehood if you're not going to actually stop the killing of our people and you're going to keep bankrolling the state of Israel to keep killing those people? There's no point in having a state if there's no people to live with it. And right now, the people of Gaza are being exterminated and being genocided. And so that's the need that we need to address, not just some fake statehood announcement by all these complicit countries.
This is definitely an attempt to try and silence the masses, to try and distract them from their original want and their demand of an arms embargo, and also try and protect themselves in their own image, because they could say, you know, oh, but we recognize the Palestinian state. But what does that mean for the actual people in Palestine when their land is being stolen every day, when there's still U.S. bombs being dropped from them, when the U.K. and Canada are still helping to send weapons?
What's next for Israel's genocide? It's being reported that aid officials working in Gaza have been warned against investing time or resources in the central refugee camps, which house hundreds of thousands of families, as they plan to invade the refugee camps after Gaza City.
After 6 weeks of fighting, some 300,000 Palestinians have left Gaza City, with nearly 1 million unwilling or unable to leave. Many say they know that if they do leave, Israel will steal their homes and not allow them to return. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
First ever wrestling double for Iran in Zagreb. Freestyle champions and now Greco-Roman wrestlers have sealed it early with a dominant show, bringing pride and joy back home.
After the glorious achievements of Iran's wrestlers, they have lifted the nation's spirit. We clearly see people's happiness in society. Everyone felt proud. Like that beautiful phrase printed on the wrestlers' singlets, "My life for Iran," with that same spirit, Iran's flag is truly precious to us.
Iran's Greco-Roman team, with a striking and dominant display, managed to secure their championship early, with 3 golds, 1 silver, and 1 bronze across 7-day categories. They sealed their victory a full day before the competition ended. Meanwhile, the freestyle team also shone, earning 2 golds, 2 silvers, and 3 bronzes to win the 2025 Zagreb Championship. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has also congratulated the victories of the Iranian wrestlers, saying, "I congratulate the young champions in Greco-Roman wrestling competitions. Steadfast determination of you and also your brothers in freestyle wrestling have brought honor to the country. I ask God for your continued success and victories, and I congratulate the athletes, coaches, and officials.
Wrestling runs deep in the culture of Iranian people. Its energy and passion are not just about today's victories. With the potential we have, more young athletes will definitely join the team, and even those training in the most remote corners of the country now have the chance to continue on their path of growth and progress.
The back-to-back victories mark a new chapter for Iranian wrestling, showing both strength on the mat and the promise of a new generation rising behind.
Iran's dominance on the mat is now undeniable, with both freestyle and Greco-Roman squads crowned world champions in Croatia. Ali Reza Akbari, Tehran.
NATO deployed three French fighter jets to eastern Poland on Friday as a so-called deterrent against Russia. Many analysts argue that it is the Western alliance's expansion that sparked the conflict in Ukraine. The European Commission has unveiled its 19th sanctions package targeting Moscow's energy, banking and high-tech sectors.
We are working on a new solution to finance Ukraine's defense efforts. This is based on the immobilized Russian assets. We must be very clear, this is Russia's war, and the perpetrator must pay for it.
But inside the European Parliament, critics warn that hard-pressed EU taxpayers are footing the bill.
The EU has spent 169 billion euros on the war so far, and the new seven-year budget would add another 100 billion euros. Up to 20% of the EU budget could go to Ukraine.
Some claim that one of the main beneficiaries of the war is the United States.
Socialismo. We used to buy cheap energy from the Russians, and today we are spending 700 billion euros to buy that same energy from Washington. The EU has also failed on weapons, which we buy from the United States to give to Ukraine.
There's no doubt that natural gas sanctions imposed by Brussels have hit the EU much harder than Russia, leading to soaring European energy costs while Moscow was able to find alternative markets. Then, thanks to high global oil and gas prices, the Kremlin was able to offset the economic squeeze intended by the EU. Several of the EU's 27 government leaders are expected to oppose the bloc's latest sanctions package against Russia.
It remains hard to see how the European Union is going to respond because the member states remain divided over the issue. But 19 rounds of sanctions